Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. Today, we're going to talk about how the USDA helps McDonald's and Taco Bell and Pizza Hut sell junk food from Mother Jones. Then, why you should really be concerned about eating those sweets, because that can cause a high blood sugar, and that in turn raises your risk of depression in your diabetics. Harvard School of Public Health. And how a coca extract could impact Alzheimer's from the Icahn School of Medicine, and many more studies, always from quality independent research. Then we're going to take a look at, can chronic cell phone use hinder your infant's development? This is from our public health segment. Also from our public health segment, ways to avoid genetically modified foods. And then I'm going to look at some specialized reports on fascism, because we are increasingly seeing the militarization of police turning communities into war zones. And I want you to hear from The War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of America's Police, from the ACLU. Also, the feds have turned America upside down when it comes to our rights. How so? And also from, this is from Der Spiegel, one of the most respected publications in the world from Germany. The return of the state secret police in Germany. The Stasi in East Germany? No, these people are a lot worse. And this is today. Also, Massachusetts SWAT teams insist they're private corporations. They have no public accountability for what they do. And then we're also going to look at, in depth, and this is really going to be revealing to a lot of people, from Peter Van Buren, Shredding the Fourth Amendment in Post-Constitutional America, Four Ways It No Longer Applies. Most people are not aware of this. We want them to be aware. Also, we're going to do a review, if time permits, of the Phoenix program. Now, for our older audience, and you knew about the Vietnam War, and if you were an activist, as many of us were, you know that at the heart of the Vietnam War was this cancer, and it was called the Phoenix Program, where the CIA and the U.S. government simply used terrorism as a tool. It was well known. They called it pacification and neutralization. No, it was a program of terror and psychological warfare against the civilian population. It was only used under the guise of counterterrorism. As a result, tens of thousands of innocent civilians were kidnapped, tortured, and murdered by our government, working in cooperation with the Vietnamese, the South Vietnamese. Is that happening again today? You bet. Why aren't we talking about it? Well, because we have sold-out legislators on the left and the right, and they're not about to open up the Pandora's box, the military-industrial spy complex, because that's where they might have a job in the future. So we're going to expose it. My guest in the second part of our program today is Steve Horn. Steve will be speaking by Skype from Madison, Wisconsin, about the Department of Defense's climate change warnings versus the U.S. government and its failed leadership in global warming. He's a research fellow, and he'll be giving us the latest information. So, as you see, we have a lot to cover. Anything I'm not able to get to today, I will get to on the Sunday evening program at 8 p.m. I'm sure that most people are unaware of how complicit the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, is, headed by a notorious GMO supporter, Tom Vilsack. According to Mother Jones, Kira Butler, quote, the USDA's My Plate program recommends going easy on fast food. Quote, people eat out more often, particularly at fast food restaurants, are more likely to be overweight or obese, it says. Sounds sensible. I agree. But there's one little problem. The USDA also oversees the dairy checkoff, a group that works hand-in-hand with fast food chains. That's one of the main findings in a new report by Michelle Simon, a public health lawyer who writes about fast food politics. The bulk of the dairy checkoff's work with fast food chains happens through a marketing group called Dairy Management, Inc., which regularly helps companies create and promote menu items that contain dairy, many of which are a far cry from the USDA's recommendation for a healthy diet. Let me give you examples. They promote, ask for water or fat-free or low-fat milk, unsweetened tea, and other drinks without added sugar. That's what they say, okay. But that's what the USDA says, but the USDA overseen dairy checkoff program helped generate Starbucks smoothies, 41 grams of sugar, 300 calories, McDonald's McCafe products, 450 calories, and 57 grams of sugar. Taco Bell's Cantina Double Steak, 750 calories, 29 grams of fat. Domino's American Legion's Pizza, with 40% more cheese, 320 calories per slice, and 18 grams of fat. And Cheese Hut's three cheese stuffed crust pizza, 360 calories per slice, 17 grams of fat. Now here are a few more details on those partnerships. Since 2009, the Dairy Checkoff has promoted what it calls cheese demand enhancement through a partnership with Domino's Pizza. By creating a pizza with 40% more cheese, it has generated $177 million through sales of more than a billion additional pounds of milk. In 2013, the Dairy Checkoff, Domino introduced a U.S.-approved school lunch pizza called Smart Slice in 450 districts across 39 states. In 2013, the Dairy Checkoff partnered with Taco Bell to launch a Cantina Double Steak and new cheese shreds, increasing the total dairy sales by 4%. In 2013, the Dairy Checkoff helped Pizza Hut create a three-cheese stuffed crust pizza, the chain's first new permanent item in 20 years. The USDA's National Dairy Promotion and Research Program helped McDonald's launch McCafe Beverages and the Angus Cheeseburger. The Dairy Checkout also provides six dairy specialists who offer, quote, technical assistance, support, and dairy expertise to McDonald's, and it employs on-site dairy scientists at Taco Bell. So how in good conscience can the USDA recommend limiting visits to fast food restaurants on the one hand while helping those very same restaurants sell more junk food on the other? So that is what we're dealing with. This, as I've mentioned many times, is just part of the contradiction that we see constantly in governmental agencies. And by the way, on my Monday evening program, I'm going to do a two-hour special on what's wrong with Obamacare. And this has nothing to do with what the arguments generally are about you can no longer always choose your own provider. This is about why, from beginning to end, at every level, it's a failure, and why we should have universal health care as well as a private insurer, meaning if you want private insurance to select your own hospital or doctor, you should have that right. But for everyone else that wants to make sure that you don't go broke and you have quality health care, whatever it may be that you need, you also have it. But I'll be going through this methodically with a group of scholars. You won't want to miss that two-hour special. In any case, researchers have suggested that people with diabetes may be more prone to depression because of an interaction with the high blood sugar levels and neurotransmitters associated with depression. Now they've been able to prove this, and they presented their findings at the International Society of Endocrinology and Endocrine Society. Now, previous research had shown that there was an association, but they weren't sure the mechanisms driving this. In Medical News Today, they reported on a study by researchers at Harvard School of Public Health, which explored the relationship between depression and diabetes in 65,000 women. And then there was another group that also showed a very high correlation between depression. It was upwards of higher than 53%. Quote, depression may result from the biochemical changes directly caused by diabetes or its treatment. So here's the takeaway message. Right now we have nearly one-third of all Americans suffering from either diabetes, probably around 26 to 30 million, because many are not diagnosed, pre-diabetes, or overweight and having all of the criteria to become diabetic. This is the highest amount of diabetes and obesity per population in the world of any country. So when you think we have the best health care, we have the worst health care of any developed country on all levels, from infant mortality to how healthy you are at the age of 60. And so just remember, one more reason not to become a diabetic or pre-diabetic is because you're going to be more susceptible to depression. And then it's a loop. Once you're depressed, you're less motivated to exercise, to eat right, and to be optimistic. You're less motivated. You kind of given up, you surrender, and you just become apathetic. So we don't want people to go there. We want people to live a happy, healthy, long life. So watch what you eat and be conscious of those choices. Starting in the fall, I'll be selecting from this audience, but not now. Please do not contact my office. I'm out of the city, and I have some new protocols for helping people with their brains, whether that is from depression and anxiety, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, anything with the dementia, memory loss. And it'll take 1 year with a large clinical study, multiple people around the United States, to see how well this works. And so I'm always looking in the scientific literature and anything that can be proven to impact brain aging. The latest comes from the Icahn School of Medicine, and here's what it says. Quote, more than 5 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease. By 2050, this number is expected to increase to 16 million. With figures like these, the race is on to find ways of preventing it. A new study from the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York finds that coca extract can do just that. The research team led by Dr. Pacenti, a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine, found that coca extract may reduce or block damage to nerve pathways found in patients with Alzheimer's. This means that symptoms of the condition, such as cognitive decline, could be prevented. Well, that's good. Right, but that's only one thing. And nowhere in here does it talk about stop eating the things that cause inflammation, because it's the inflammation that causes the cytokines, free radicals, and prostaglandins that actually damage the cells. From MIT, a study suggests that the Neanderthals ate more vegetables than previously thought. Quote, Neanderthals from Spain may have consumed more vegetables than previously thought. This is published in PLOS ONE. And Neanderthal diet reconstruction remains difficult. Current methods of dietary analysis use isotopes and focus on the role of meat in the diet, which may be overemphasized. For instance, some evidence suggests that plants may have contributed to their diet. And then they went back and took a look, and that's what they found. So that's interesting. And our final statement on this is from Loma Linda University. Vegetarian diets produce fewer greenhouse gases and increase longevity. So consuming a plant-based diet results in a more sustainable environment and reduces greenhouse gases. And a study and an article produced by researchers at Loma Linda University School of Public Health and published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition presents this. So that's good. It can reduce, quote, the death rate of non-vegetarians was almost 20% higher than that of vegetarians, and semi-vegetarians. On top of lower death rates, switching from a non-vegetarian, meaning a meat-based diet, to a vegetarian diet, or even semi-vegetarian diet, also helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The vegetarian diets result in almost a third less emissions compared to non-vegetarian diets. Modifying the consumption of animal-based foods can therefore be a feasible and effective tool for climate change mitigation and public health improvements. So the takeaway message is simple. Even switching to a semi-vegetarian diet or a full vegetarian diet would make all the difference in the world. So that's good. All right, one more reason to do the right thing. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go to our public health segment. This comes from the Environmental Health Trust. Quote, can chronic cell phone use hinder your infant's development? Now, the two most important communicative mechanisms a newborn innately has to navigate his world, her world, are eye gaze and crying. From birth, newborns are constantly developing speech, language, and communication skills with every response they command from their caregiver. As early as 5 days old, an infant can tailor his cries to reflect hunger or wetness or discomfort, as well as differentiate between mother and caregiver. Additionally, very early on, newborns and infants develop pre-linguistic skills, meaning eye gaze, signaling a cue of communications, and joint attention, the ability of an infant to rest his or her gaze on an object at the same time the caregiver is looking at the same object. Now, this is speculated that eye gaze between a baby and a mother is one of the most important pre-linguistic skills to occur before verbal communication develops. However, excessive cell phone usage can work to hinder the communicative rhythm and bonding experience that new mothers and infants work to establish, especially within the first 6 months. Now, the communication cues can be easily missed, and trying to decode differences in newborn cries, like hunger versus wet diaper, can become very difficult, as it is so important for new mothers to pay attention to different cries. Constant distraction from a cell phone can alter the way the other perceives the cry, thus making it more difficult to decode. Now, here's something most people are not aware of unless you have stayed off the technological grid, and that is that infants are so intuitive early on that even the slightest delay in response to a coo or a cry can alter the way they perceive their world. Additionally, if a mother is pursuing high emotion content, meaning jabbering on the cell phone or angry at something, and or if they're on Facebook or social media, the overflow of emotion to the mother may inadequately color her response to the infant, because what energy you pick up, you then transfer. So breastfeeding can also be affected by a constant need to search the web or pursue Facebook, taking away from a significant bonding period for mother and baby. And many mothers use cell phone to pass the time during a long nursing feeding session of early infancy. Not a good idea. Mind you, you're breaking that energy. And also from our public health segment, this is how you can avoid genetically modified foods. And it's important. From PreventDisease.com, they show that unless you use a geographically located source, meaning, do you know where your food comes from? The answer is no. Unless it's a local farmer's market, yes, the farmer. Is this organic? Yes. Is it non-organic? Yes, yeah, non-organic. So you have to ask questions. Don't assume. So A, become familiar with the most common foods which are genetically modified or their derivatives. Soy, 93% is GM. Corn, 86%. Canola, 100% is genetically modified unless it's organic. Sugar beets, 95%. Cotton, 93%. That's why you buy organic cotton. Dairy, cows injected with the growth the growth-enhancing bovine hormone, sugar, also cane sugar, and zucchini and baked goods. Now, here are some of the things that they use genetically modified food in that you might not be aware of. Artificial sweeteners, baking powder, bread, candy, canola oil, cereal, chips, chocolate, cookies, cornmeal, cornstarch, soy sauce, soy protein, soy flour, soy cheese, sodas, salad dressings, peanut butter, meat substitutes, mayonnaise, margarine, crackers, enriched flours, all kinds, food additives, fried foods, frozen yogurt, high fructose corn syrup, hot dogs, ice cream, infant formula, mini veggie burgers that use the soy analogs, tomato sauce, tofu and tempeh and tamari if they're not organic. So that's a guide to help you. Then recognize fruit and vegetable label numbers. If it is a four-digit number, the food is conventionally produced. If it's a five-digit number, beginning with an 8, it is genetically modified. If it's a five-digit number beginning with 9, it's organic. Remember, on that label, if it's there, look for the five-digit number with the letter or the numeral 9. And for those in the audience who are eating beef and are not going to stop, then look for 100% grass-fed organic. Otherwise, you're definitely getting GM. And then wherever possible, shop locally where you can learn about your source of food. And this is the Digital Journal. Quote, a new study shows that genetically modified organisms, toxins are linked to leukemia and anemia. Research shows toxic effects at the lowest dose tested. A new study shows that ingesting toxins produced by genetically modified plants leads to toxic effects on blood cells and potentially lethal diseases. And the study was conducted by a group of scientists at the Department of Genetics and Morphology, Institute of Biological Sciences at the University of Brasilia. So, good study, and it was published in the Journal of Hematology. So, meets all the criteria. Did any of you hear about it? See it? Read it? No, and you won't. And by the way, for those of you who think, well, you're conscious, you drink beer. Did you know that beer does not have to list on the label all of its ingredients? And some common beers, popular beers, use other ingredients, including corn syrup. Ah, you thought it was hops and yeast and barley and water. No, corn syrup. And that's going to be genetically modified without anyone really knowing it. Now, before we go to our guest in about 10 minutes now, first and foremost, I'm sure that most people are not aware of how many SWAT teams raids there were in the United States last year, over 40,000. And these are not looking for terrorists. They're doing minor things. If a person is truant, if they haven't paid a parking ticket. And these guys always come fully equipped, bulletproof vest and armed to the hilt, and sometimes stun grenades. And they're on a mission. They're like robots. They're paid, they do what they're told, and that's it. There's no thinking, there's no consciousness behind it. And yet we have allowed this because they haven't come for you yet. What are you going to do and what are you going to say when they do? This is from the ACLU report called The Dangerous Militarization of U.S. Law Enforcement. This is from Scott Newman, NPR. Quote, U.S. law enforcement at all levels has undergone a dangerous militarization in recent years, with heavily armed SWAT teams being deployed to serve warrants for drug searches, but rarely for the hostage situations they were designed for. The American Civil Liberties Union says in a new report. The report, War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Policing, the ACLU says its investigation corroborates the unnecessary use of proliferation of special weapons and tactics teams made possible by federal programs that incentivize aggressive weapons battlefield tactics at the local level. The study looked at 800 SWAT deployments among 20 local, state, and federal police agencies in 1 year. Quote, using these federal funds, state and local law enforcement agencies have amassed military arsenals purportedly to wage a failed war on drugs, the battlegrounds of which have disproportionately been in the communities of color. But these arsenals are by no means free of cost for communities. The ACLU report highlights a number of cases where it says the use of SWAT teams led to unnecessary deaths and injuries, and echoes a similar report from 2006. So they are here, but no politician is speaking up against them. And this is a separate report on this topic. Well, I want to give it a little different perspective on this one. This is where it's happening all over the world, but here, you're going to learn something interesting here. This is from Ulrich Rippert, The Return of the State Secret Police in Germany. Quote, last week's edition of Der Spiegel published over 50 National Security Agency documents that had been handed to the media by former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden last year. These top-secret documents make clear the extent of the close collaboration between U.S. intelligence agency and the German Foreign Intelligence Service and domestic intelligence agency. They contradict the claims by leading officials in the security apparatus and the Interior Ministry that they were surprised and shocked over the extent of the National Security Agency's activities in Germany. The Spiegel document revealed that the two German agencies, intelligence agencies, as well as the ministerial representatives, were well informed about the capabilities and activities of the National Security Agency. German intelligence agency apparently even pressed for closer cooperation and on spying on everyone in Germany. Quote, the documents paint a picture of an omnipotent American agency which developed increasingly close ties to German agencies over 13 years and at the same time massively expanded its presence. So, all of that hand-wringing and, oh my goodness, you know, Chancellor Merkel was spied upon, they all knew it. They cooperated. So now what we have is we have return to the Stasi East German mindset and policing. The world has become one giant terror threat, according to the National Security Agency and Dick Cheney. So what are we going to do about it? Well, thus far, we're not doing anything. I want to go in depth now to show you what I'm very concerned about. Now, many times on this program, you've heard me talk about where are the people on the right who claim that they're patriots? I don't see it. Yeah, you can wave a flag, but when are you protesting against the taking away of our First Amendment rights? Not in the sense that most apologists would say, oh yeah, I can say anything I want. But anyone who does say what they want, especially if what they want to say is against a government policy or program or corporate interest, now finds yourself on an enemies list. And unlike Nixon's enemy list, these are all lists where every environmentalist, every peace activist, every organizer is now considered a threat. They monitor every phone call, they read every email, and then they do what is called plus one. So let's say you call a person. Now, you didn't know this, so please pay attention, especially to the smart alecks, to the wise asses, you know, the people on the left and the right who just are obnoxious in their own narcissism. You think you know something. Trust me, you don't. Did you know, for example, that every person you call and every person that person calls, and every person that person calls is also monitored. So they start creating a ring around your email and then your phone calls, so that if you think that someone is calling you, but they've only called you once in a year, and somehow no one's monitoring it, every single one of these calls is monitored. They have the total content, not just the date. That was a lie. That was a big red lie they put out to confuse people. Every single word you say is captured. Every photograph, every email, every communication, not only to the person that you, but everyone they communicate with and everyone they communicate with. So starting with one person, it is completely possible to have 2 or 3 or 4 million people then in their database. Now, if anyone uses certain words, certain references, then you're further isolated, and then you're put into another division, which then sees you as a threat. It is in that context that I am saying, gee whiz, shouldn't we pay attention to the basics? As Peter Van Buren, in his article on shredding the Fourth Amendment in post-constitutional America, has so aptly put it. But let me just share a bit of history from another America. I don't mean to be quaint. I'm just trying to be accurate in a historical sense. It is called the Bill of Rights. Why? It was designed to protect the people from their government. If the First Amendment's right to speak out publicly was the people's wall of security, then the Fourth Amendment's right to privacy was its buttress. It was once thought that the government should neither be able to stop citizens from speaking nor peer into their lives. Now think of that as the essence of the constitutional era that ended when those towers came down. Consider how privacy worked before 9/11 and how it works now in post-constitutional America. And I say that with intent. We no longer have constitutional protections. And if you think those clowns called the Supreme Court are there to defend the Constitution, no, they're there to defend or propagate their own ideologies, their own ideals, and their own interpretation of the Constitution. And we've seen with Citizens United and so many other rulings of theirs how misinformed they are. But let's go specifically to the Fourth Amendment. A response to British King George's excessive invasions of privacy in colonial America, the Fourth Amendment pulls no punches. Quote, "The right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized," end quote. The post-constitutional America, the government might as well have taken scissors to the original copy of the Constitution stored at the National Archives, then crumple up the Fourth Amendment and toss it in the garbage can. The National Security Agency revelations of Edward Snowden are, in that sense, not just a shock to the conscience, but to the Fourth Amendment itself. Our government spies on us, all of us, all the time, every second of your life. Without suspicion, without warrants, without probable cause, without restraint. Now, in my life, that would qualify as unreasonable. And it would be unreasonable also from the old constitutional world, but no more. Let me then share with you 4 ways that in the name of American security, and according to our government, the Fourth Amendment no longer applies at all, anywhere, at any time, for any reason in our lives. And it's just not Obama and the people put him in office and how he served them so well. He should have 100-plus rating from corporate America. He is perfection. And he should have 0 from all the people who thought that he was going to do right. And he hasn't done a damn thing right for the rest. Begin at America's borders. Most people believe they are in the United States as soon as they step off an international flight and are thus fully covered by the Bill of Rights. No. The truth has, in the 21st century, become infinitely more complicated as long-standing practices are manipulated to serve the expanding desires of the national security state. The mining of words and concepts for new, darker meanings is a hallmark of how things work in post-constitutional America. Over the years, recognizing that certain situations could render Fourth Amendment requirements impractical or against the public interest, the Supreme Court crafted various exceptions to them. One was the border search. The idea was that the United States should be able to protect itself by stopping and examining people entering the country. As a result, routine border searches without warrants are constitutionally reasonable simply by virtue of where they take place. It's a concept with a long history, enumerated by the First Congress in 1789. But here's the twist in the present era. The definition of border has been changed. Upon arriving in the United States from abroad, you are not legally present in the country until allowed to enter by Department of Homeland Security officials. You know, the guys who look into your luggage and stamp your passport? Until that moment, you exist in a legal void where the protections of the Bill of Rights and the laws of the United States do not apply. This concept also predates post-constitutional America and the Department of Homeland Security. Remember the sorting process at Ellis Island in the late 19th century and early 20th centuries? No lawyers allowed there. Those modest exceptions were all part of constitutional America. Today, once reasonable searches at the border have been morphed into a constitutional free zone, the border is now a strip of land circling the country and extending 100 miles inland that includes two-thirds of the United States population. You heard me right. Two-thirds of all people in the United States are in a constitutional free zone. In this vast region, Customs and Border Protection can set up checkpoints and conduct warrantless searches. At airports, American citizens are now similarly subjected to search and seizure, as a filmmaker, Laura Petraeus, whose work focuses on national security issues in general, and Edward Snowden in particular, knows firsthand. Since 2006, almost every time she has returned to the United States, her plane has been met by government agents and her laptop and phone examined. There are multiple similar high-profile cases, including those of a WikiLeaks researcher and a Chelsea Manning supporter. But ordinary citizens are hardly exempt. Despite standing in an American airport, a pane of glass away from loved ones, you're not in the United States and have no Fourth Amendment rights. How many such airport searches are conducted in the aggregate is unknown. The best information we have comes from a Freedom of Information Act request by the ACLU. It revealed that in an 18-month period, 6,600 people, about half of them U.S. citizens, were subjected to electronic devices searches at the border. Here's another example of how definitions have been readjusted to serve the national security state's overriding needs. The Department of Justice created a post-constitutional interpretation of the Fourth Amendment that allows it to access millions of records of Americans using only subpoenas, no search warrants. So that's what they're doing. Also, you have technology in the Fourth Amendment. Some observers suggest there's little new here. For example, the compiling of information on innocent Americans by J. Edgar Hoover's low-tech FBI back in the 1960s has been well documented. Paper reports on activities, recordings, conversations, and photos of meetings and trysts, all secretly obtained, expose the lives of civil rights leaders, popular musicians, and anti-war protesters. From 1956 till at least 1971, the government also wiretapped the calls and conversations of Americans under the Bureau of Counterintelligence program called COINTELPRO. But those who look to such history of government illegality for a strange kind of nothing new under the sun reassurance have not grasped the impact of fast developing technology in scale, scope, and sheer efficiency. Today, the size matters. To avoid such encroaching digitalizations, they simply review every single piece of electronic data there is. So that is also incursions. And the national security disclosure under HIPAA, and while this is the conclusion of this, but the National Security Agency's electronic basket of violations of the Fourth Amendment pre-Snowden meant to take place in utter secrecy. Here's a violation that sits in broad daylight. Since 2002, my doctor can disclose any medical records to the National Security Agency without my permission or knowledge. So can yours. Congress passed the Health Information Portability and Accountability Act in 1996, quote, to assure that individuals' health information is properly protected. Nonsense. Never believe a legislator. They're just psychopaths, all of them. They don't ever tell you the truth about why they're voting on something and why law is meant to be what it is. So you likely signed a HIPAA agreement at your doctor's office granting access to your records. However, Congress quietly amended the HIPAA Act in 2002 to permit disclosure of those records for national security purposes. Specifically, anything that the government wants to know about your medical background, it can get. And you won't even know it. And your doctor's not allowed to tell you that your records were given and searched. So at this point, in conclusion, when it comes to national security matters, the Fourth Amendment has, by any practical definition, been done away with as part of the post-constitutional America. In post-constitutional America, the old words that once defined our democracy are twisted in new ways, not discarded. Previously unreasonable searches become reasonable ones under new governmental interpretations of the Fourth Amendment. Traditional tools of law, like subpoenas and warrants, continue to exist even as they morph into a monstrous new form. Americans are told and unfortunately believe, more often than not, that they retain rights they no longer have. Wait for the rhetoric that goes with the celebrations of our freedoms this July 4th. You won't hear a lot about the National Security Agency then, but you should. In pre-constitutional America, the colonists knew that they were under the king's thumb. In totalitarian, fascist, police state America today, which we are, well, we don't seem to get it. And as a result, we don't define it, we don't talk about it. If you're the average American, you simply accept it. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. Have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. We're gonna move
it slow. I'd like to welcome all of you from around the world. And I just got my latest numbers. I'll share them with you on our next program, because they are, well, I'll just give you one example here before we go to our guest who's standing by. These are some remarkable numbers. We had 296,847 unique listeners, meaning first time, 12,930,659 visitors. For people, the demographics, wow. I'm looking at 18, we actually have teenagers as young as 13 to 17. The large group is 18 to 24-year-old, and the largest group of listeners, 25 to 34 years old, 25 to 34. And the next largest group is 35 to 44. 59% female to 41% male. And how about these numbers? Right now, listening in London, 22,800. In India, 96,700. United Kingdom, 107,700. Australia, 60,000. And on it goes. So I appreciate the people tuning in, reading the articles, listening to the broadcasts, and sharing the information. Let's go to our guest standing by in Madison, Wisconsin, Steve Horn, research fellow at the Smog blog, which has now become the world's most accurate source of fact-based information regarding global warming, climate change, and is a journalist watchdog on climate change misinformation campaigns. It was named Time Magazine as one of the 25 best blogs in 2011, and he has studied political science and journalism at the University of Wisconsin, and his investigative reports have appeared in Al Jazeera, The Guardian, The Nation, Truthout, Alternet, etc. His website is dsmogblog.com. Nice to have you with us today, Steve.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to begin with what I find a gross hypocrisy in our government right now, which is confusing to many people. On the one hand, the Pentagon and our military is fully aware of the dangers and threats associated with climate change and global warming. In fact, in recent years, the Pentagon, in its quadrennial defense review, with their opinion that climate change may be the greatest threat facing U.S. national security, not terrorism. In fact, you reported on a Pentagon release earlier this year which stated that climate change will like likely further contribute to an increase in terrorist threats. In the fact that the report clearly aligned the Department of Defense with anthropogenic climate change. But on the other hand, we're just not doing anything about it. And that concerns me. Could you take it from there and give us a broader understanding of this problem?
Yeah, well, yeah, the Pentagon released its quadrennial defense review back in March of this year. Yeah, its name kind of says what it is. It's released every 4 years. And actually, it's interesting because the last one actually had a whole section on climate change and its threats to national security. This one just had, I mean, it was still mentioned, it was still pretty alarming, but they devoted less space to it than the other one, so that's just something to take note of. But I think even more importantly is this cognitive dissonance that exists within the Pentagon, which I guess makes sense for an institution that big that causes such destruction around the world and even here at home. You know, they talk about how climate change will create these problems. What's missing is that they're a major causer of the problem. So you look at 800-plus military bases around the world. You look at how much fuel they use to fire on the world on jets and do what they're doing in the 100-plus countries the United States is currently occupying. And you realize, well, it's kind of ironic coming from this causer of climate change that they are talking about the threat of it, but then doing absolutely nothing to curb that threat. Actually, all they're doing is making the threat worse. So that was sort of what my article was about. And it also was about the fact that another thing that's in the Quadrennial Defense Review is that they actually see climate change not just as a threat, but also as an opportunity. And they talk about the Arctic, and talk about the melting Arctic, and it's a chance for United States oil companies and Western oil companies who are now competing with Russian oil companies to tap into the Arctic for oil and gas that's now melting. So on one hand, they're talking about climate change as a threat because it could cause terrorism because of desperation, food shortages, many other reasons, just very hot weather. There's a whole host of reasons why it could cause terrorism from their perspective. From another perspective, all they're doing is doing things that would only create terrorism, and also seeing it as an opportunity to tap into that oil in the Arctic. So it's a contradictory document, but it's also kind of interesting. What I pointed to was, so the Pentagon talks this way. You look at Congress. Congress actually has members who just outright deny climate change. So it's a multi-tiered approach by the oil and gas industry. The oil and gas industry actually funds these congressional people to say these things. They give huge amounts of campaign contributions. And so lots of people just deny climate change because that's who's funding their campaigns. At the same time, the Pentagon is not denying it. They're just seeing climate change as partially a threat, but also a huge opportunity because, and then it shows who does the Pentagon serve. So that's the last question, sort of the Pentagon's, whose interests does it serve? And I think what it points out, just in that document alone, it points out that they're in service to these big multinational oil and gas interests that see it as an opportunity to tap into the Arctic, the same ones who are funding the deniers in Congress. So it's kind of a complex situation, but I think the document clarifies some things if you read it closely and read between the lines.
Okay, thank you on that. So while our Department of Defense agrees that anthropogenic climate change will result in rising rates of poverty and political instability and domestic terrorism and further environmental degradation and destruction of coastal infrastructures, at the same time, it's supporting our foreign policy agendas with other countries, within other countries, to further increase and develop fossil fuel technologies such as the tar sand pipeline and increase fracking in our new Cold War with Russia. How do you make sense of these contradictions?
The way I make sense of them is, the United States is sort of the epicenter of empire. The United States is sort of the central force to carry out what multinational corporations want. When they talk about national security, I don't really like to use the term that much, but that's the term they use. So when they talk about national security, they mean, you know, the secure flow of profits for big multinational corporations. And so the way I make sense of it is exactly that. When they talk about the threat of terrorism, they just mean that it could be a threat to profits because it disrupts profits. You look at what's happening in Iraq right now with ISIS, for example, and you look at what happens now, but even much more in the past in Nigeria, where pipelines were being disrupted or there was attacks on infrastructure, which is what's happening with ISIS in Iraq. That's what they're talking about. I mean, it's couched in this national security language, and it's good to drum up patriotism, but at the end of the day, that's what they mean. And so I think that it's only a contradiction in the way that they explain it to the public. But if you understand the actual policy agenda and follow the money, so to speak, then it's not so much a contradiction. It has a different logic, and it's a logic that makes sense from a perspective of imperialism.
Steve, while there are some in the military who warn about the dangers of climate change, then you find others like General Petraeus, now with KKR, Global Institute, and actually teaching KKR's curriculum at Harvard and other universities. And they're the major buyout firm, the Equity Partnership. Mm-hmm. And while he also promotes dirty energy technology, especially hydrofracking, yet I don't know if you realize it or not that our military completely relies on fossil fuels, and our military-industrial complex is the largest their largest group causing these pollutants to go into our environment. How close are the military's ties, therefore, with the private oil and gas corporations?
Right. Well, I mean, I think Dave Petraeus is the sort of number one symbol of the close ties that bind three sectors, the military, private equity or capital, and oil and gas industries that rely on that capital, especially for more expensive drilling like fracking or like tar sands extraction, et cetera. Actually, KKR, during the time that Petraeus joined after he left the CIA, not only they're doing a lot with fracking, but they actually opened up shop in Canada to do stuff with the tar sands. So it's a good example of, you know, he's a symbolic example of that. But also, as I think it's important to point out, the Pentagon has huge contracts with oil and gas companies. The biggest one is BP for fuel, for jet fuel, for for on the ground vehicles fuel. They use a lot of fuel. They're the number one institutional user, as you said. And so, while they're a big user, they're also there. They're also in places like Iraq, in Africa, and other places. Central Asia. They have smaller troops. Presence, basically all there to maintain and ensure the secure flow of oil and gas and other fossil fuels from those countries. So even if it's not going to the United States, it might be going to other NATO allies of the United States, and United States being the main force behind NATO, the creator of NATO. So I think that that's a good way of looking at it. Basically, it's two prongs. One is because of the contractual relationship between the Pentagon and oil companies, and how much they use, it's important, but also they use that fuel to ensure even more profits for oil and gas companies. So in a way, the Pentagon is almost a subsidiary of even bigger interests. That's oil and gas interests and private capital interests or private equity. And so again, that's why I think David Petraeus is sort of number one symbol of this, and his passing through the revolving door from the national security state to private equity at KKR.
I appreciate your interest in this topic and all your commitment. My final thought is that here, once again, we have Obama making statements. I believe they're purely politically intended to show his concern about the climate, and yet he turns right around as he's done, and he forwards and pushes environmental unsafe technologies like so-called clean coal, the tar sands pipeline, new nuclear power plants, and hopes to expand gas hydrofracking. in spite of the fact that Germany, as of today, now has over 50% of its entire energy needs met with solar and has come up with a whole new generation of solar technologies, making more affordable and smaller with greater storage, energy storage capacity. And we're not even in that game at all to the degree that the Germans are. So we know where the truth is on this one. Thank you very much, Steve Horn, for being out there and at the DeSmog blog and helping people understand the facts. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Steve Horn from Madison, Wisconsin. Looking at the clock, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time, and I will get to all the other issues on our next program. Have a lot to talk about, including TISA, T-I-S-A. Never heard of it? It's important. It's right up there with the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Agreement as selling out America, betraying Americans in favor of big banks. I'll deal with that also. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Now let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I got this email from John from New York City this morning. And he said that responding to a major case of research misconduct, federal prosecutors have taken the rare step of filing charges against a scientist after he admitted falsifying data that led to millions in grants and hopes of a breakthrough in the AIDS vaccine research. Now, you spoke about your doubts for this vaccine for AIDS when it first came out. But he talked about, years of work and millions of National Institute of Health grants. Another laboratory uncovered irregularities that suggested that the results, once hailed as groundbreaking, were totally bogus. So there's hope out there that every now and then you get something like this that happens. So he thought you might want to comment on that.
Well, there have been over 80 vaccine trials with AIDS. All of them have failed, and they will continue to fail. But in America, once you understand how to play the game, it is not in succeeding that you earn your income. It is in your efforts. So as long as you're connected and then you tell people that you want to help solve a problem, then it's the 1,000th march against breast cancer. But it never stops a single person from developing breast cancer or helping a person who has breast cancer be cured. It's about making the money. And then we stop asking the questions. We just see Central Park with 10,000 people marching or biking or the walk for the cure, dance for the cure, party for the cure. But did you actually cure anyone? The answer is no. We have to understand that we're very confused as a nation because we have lost the capacity for critical thinking. And those who have critical thinking are excluded from the conversations. So all you really have are people who are promoting a particular agenda. That's especially true when it comes to the war on AIDS. Is completely corrupt from top to bottom at every level. The legitimate researchers, scientists, physicians, activists, reporters are looking at the truth. When they finally speak the truth, they're excluded from having a forum to talk about it. And so there's not going to be any vaccine for AIDS. And the only reason they ever were able to get monkeys after dozens and hundreds and thousands of trials on them is because they first gave them chemotherapy. So if you give a human being chemotherapy or primate chemotherapy, sooner or later, if you give enough chemotherapy, you're going to destroy their immune system. Then you can infect them with a virus and then claim that it's the virus that caused their illness, but it wasn't the case. So everything about this war on AIDS, like the war on cancer, is simply for the profit and benefit from those who have gamed the system. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Eutrice Lead. Hi, Eutrice.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
Great. Well, it's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and listeners have their say.
Excellent. Right now, Eutrice Lead.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song.